friendship as a gift to us, that we need each other. And, you know, it's important that our love needs are met in God first, that kind of ache in our heart for us to be loved and to love and to know and be known is only met by God first. Because however good our human relationships are, none of us are sufficient for each other. However good a friend or a partner we are, not one human being is enough for another human being. Because the ache in our heart is so deep for that meaning and purpose in life that God meets that need first. And it's important that we do get that need met in God first, that we don't try to suck it out of other people, because that's extremely draining. And so, you know, God is here to satisfy our deep needs, but he also provided us with people. It's not good for us to be alone. And so today we're looking at the subject of friendship. So, wouldn't you like to have more friends? Would you like to have more friends? Would you like to be able to develop deep, meaningful relationships in your life? Yeah? Okay, so we're going to have a little look at some thoughts on friendship this morning. Now, the first thing, if you want to have a friend, how can you get more friends? This is how you get friends. You initiate, you be a friend. If you want a friend, be a friend. Because it's not about drawing something, you know, out of, you know, everything out of someone. It's about giving. It's being a friend. So the first thing is to be a friend. So if you want to have friends, initiate. Go out of your way and make friends. Be friendly. Take the first step. Don't hang back and say, I wish I had more friends. We need to be proactive and go out and be a friend in order to make friends. And then secondly, there is a chemistry with friendship, isn't there? You know, you can't force it with friendship. You either kind of click with that chemistry or you don't. We don't walk up to someone and say, I am going to be your friend. There's a chemistry about it. Sometimes we click with someone. You can't force it. So when we click with someone, then we need to initiate and go ahead and be proactive in making that friendship. And the next thing about being friends is, to a certain extent, we got to be lovable. Now, we're all lovable, right? Except when we get out of bed wrong side in the morning. But sometimes we make it very hard for people to be friends with us. You know, sometimes we're very grumpy, or we're negative, or our body language looks like we don't really want to be friends, or we're not interested. And sometimes we want friends, but everything about us is giving people a signal no. Do you know, sometimes we've been hurt in life, and inside we've taken a step back. So when people try to be friends with you, they can't find a way in. And it's like bouncing off rather than being able to make a friendship. And so we have a responsibility that if we want friends, we need to be lovable with our friends. Let's not make it really hard for somebody to like us or be our friend. If we're cold or aloof or awkward or sarcasm, doesn't sarcasm put you off a little bit? It's one thing taking the mickey. Isn't it strange how in British culture, if we really like each other, within 10 minutes of meeting someone, you'll take the mickey. And that's a kind of, I like you, and I like you enough to take the rip out of you right now. But it's another thing being sarcastic. So we need to be lovable. Number four is this. In friendships, there's such a thing as givers and takers. But true friendship is mutual. If we have a true friend, it's mutual. The giving and taking is on both sides. Have you ever been in a friendship where you seem to be doing all the giving, making all the effort, all the input? Eventually, people tire of just giving, 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 giving if there's no reciprocation. Are we a taker in our relationships? Are we expecting things from other people all the time? Are we a taker? So givers and takers, but true friendship is mutual. And it's an uneven relationship. It's not going to have mileage in it if there's one person just continually giving, giving in, compromising, helping. That's going to be a short-lived friendship. The next point, really, is unconditional love. Now, if we want a true friendship, unconditional love is the whole love with no conditions. So it's not, well, I love you if you behave this way. I love you if you remember to put the bins out. I love you if you turn up on time. But actually, I'm going to withhold my love if you don't perform to my expectations. And if you don't deliver every time, I'm going to hold back my love. Have you ever been in a friendship with someone who's kind of moody like that? You never know where you stand with them. But true friendship comes out of unconditional love where we have no conditions on it. Real love is sacrificial. And there is a love described in the Bible that is in 1 Corinthians 13 that is not proud or rude or self-seeking. A friend is not easily angered and keeps no record of wrongs. A good friend does not delight in evil, but rejoices always in the truth. A true friend will always protect, always trust, always hope, and will always persevere. Now that's true love, that's amazing love. Imagine that we could be a friend like that. And lastly, friendship is fragile. The human heart is tender, and we all have a breaking point. And it's really important, as we talk about friendship this morning, that we know that every friendship has its limits, every human being has their breaking point, and that we need to handle our relationships with care. We can't keep on hurting or wounding each other and expecting our friend to continually bounce back. At some point, damage is done. And so we need to know that friendship is fragile. So it takes maturity to be a true friend, doesn't it? We can see to be a real friend takes maturity. Now, a child, the world revolves around them, don't they? When you have a little toddler, it's me, 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 everything is about me. The world revolves around a little child. And we all go along with that because that's great and that's what a child is like. But as we grow up, it's important that we don't become that we become mature and not still childlike, that we don't still think the world revolves around us like when we were a child, but now we're able to be a giver, not just a taker. Now, maturity doesn't come with age. Just because we grow older, maturity doesn't necessarily come with it. It's a choice to be mature. We could be just as immature at, 45 as we were at 5. And yet it's important in our relationships to be mature and to know that the world doesn't revolve around us. And for Julian and I was thinking with preparing this, I know that, we have friends in this room that we have been friends with 22 years plus. And I was thinking, what is it that makes an enduring friendship with people you've known a long time? And sorry, I didn't expect to get emotional. but it is when you really know each other and you still love. When you really know each other, and some of us all live together and gone through thick and thin together, and it's that mutual appreciation that we know each other's shortcomings and good points and bad points, but that doesn't stop us being friends, that we're still friends even though we know about each other. And it's about mutual care, that if anything happened, we would all be there immediately for each other and help and care for each other and have proved that over the years, that we're all still friends after all this time. And so it's going beyond the superficial. There's such a thing as superficial friendship, and then there's a friendship that lasts a lifetime, and that is possible for us each to develop that. And I remember years ago, I think it was Gerald Coates talking about three levels of friendship, and it's a little bit like the dresser I just bought for Chloe. Last year, I bought Chloe a little chest of drawers from IKEA. It was in the bargain section, half the price of normal, looked fab, brought it home, absolutely brilliant. She decided to change her bedroom around the other day, and this beautiful veneer of the IKEA unit was shown for what it really was once we moved it. It was made of inferior material. And this is like friendships. On the surface, our veneer is very shiny and nice and looks the part. But once we have a little clash or a bump or cross swords in some way or life intervenes, we discover underneath is inferior material. It's just the chipboard. And that's at the point there is a choice. Do we stay friends or do we throw friendship away? And many people, once they discover their friend isn't quite who they thought, they get discarded. Whereas I'm hanging on to this IKEA little thing, I don't have to buy another one. But do we hold on to our friendships and say, after all these years, we know each other and we love each other and we appreciate each other and we're all still here and we move on in friendship? And so today's part of the David series is about friendship. But I thought we need to just cover the ground that now we look at David and Jonathan, we'll see how their relationship fits these points we've just looked at. And as we go through their story, I want you to think about those points that we went through, about initiating friendship, about chemistry, about being there, about sacrifice, about it being mutual, and just see if their friendship matches up to this. So who is Jonathan? So we know there's this famous story about David and Jonathan and their friendship. We're going to look a little bit at who they were and what's this friendship about. Well, what do we know about Jonathan? First of all, he's the eldest son of Saul. And you'll remember that Saul became king at age 30. And so Jonathan was quite young as well. And Jonathan was a young man. He was due to inherit the kingdom from his father. But of course, he was unaware that secretly it was David who'd been anointed. Now, we know that Saul was a brave and valiant fighter. Do you remember we looked at before in 1 Samuel 14, it says, after Saul had assumed rule over Israel, he fought against their enemies on every side, Moab, the Ammonites, Edom, the kings of Zobah, and the Philistines. Wherever he turned, he inflicted punishment on them. He fought valiantly and defeated the Amalekites, delivering Israel from the hands of those who'd plundered them. So that was who Saul was. And Jonathan was just like him. He was a fighter as well. And so he was somebody who just went out and brought the battle to him. And the first time we meet him in 1 Samuel is where we find that Saul has divided the army up and he's taken 2,000 and he's given Jonathan 1,000, a third of the fighting force. And so he's introduced into the story as a commander in the army. So he's a man of strength and a man of action. And he was always beside his father in battle. And later in the story, David writes a song about Saul and Jonathan. And this is what he says. It's a bit bloodthirsty. From the blood of the slain, from the flesh of the mighty, the bow of Jonathan did not turn back. The sword of Saul did not return unsatisfied. They were swifter than eagles. They were stronger than lions. What a fantastic, that's what kind of fighters they were. Swifter than eagles and stronger than lions. And also we discover in this story that Jonathan is very loyal to his father. They have a great relationship. And you can imagine the intrigue in court with Saul being king. Who would you trust? Who is out to get the kingship off you? But he really trusted Jonathan as his right-hand man. And Jonathan says at one point, "My father doesn't do anything, great or small, without confiding in me." And so they were, you know, father and son in a close relationship. So we see that Jonathan is capable of a deep, trusting relationship with another person. In this case, it's his father. Also, the men really loved and respected Jonathan. Do you remember the honey incident we looked at a couple of weeks ago and how Jonathan had eaten the honey and Saul was going to kill him and all that type of thing? And it was the men who went, "Hang on, Saul, you know, Jonathan didn't know about the oath. And so, you know, we want him saved. We won't allow him to be killed." So he was popular with the men, trusted by his dad. And this was really, you know, a man's world. It was all fighters together. The men spent a lot of time together fighting all their enemies. So you've got to imagine the context of David and Jonathan is a man's world where they were all out fighting and the women and children like back at base, you know, making life function while the guys are out defeating all their enemies. And it's into this context that David walks in to this rough and brutal world and they first meet. Now, the other thing we know about Jonathan is, do you remember the story of when he goes off with his armor bearer? Right? And I'll read it to you quickly. This is the story. One day, Jonathan, son of Saul, said to his young armor bearer, "Come, let's go over to the Philistine outpost on the other side, just you and me, so don't tell my dad." And Saul was staying on the outskirts of Gibeah under a pomegranate tree, and with him were about 600 men. Nobody knew that Jonathan had left. On each side of the path that Jonathan intended to cross to reach the Philistine outpost was a cliff. One cliff stood towards the north and the other to the south towards Geba. So Jonathan said to his young armor bearer, "Come on, let's go over. Perhaps the Lord will act on our behalf. Nothing can hinder the Lord from saving, whether by many or by few." The armor bearer says, "Do all that you have in mind. I am with you, heart and soul." Jonathan says, "Come on then, we'll cross over towards them and let them see us." Very provoking, bringing the battle to him. "If they say to us, 'Wait there until we come to you,' we'll stay where we are and we won't go up to them. But if they say, 'Come to us,' we'll climb up the cliff, and because that will be the sign that the Lord has given them into our hands." So both of them went out and showed themselves to the Philistine outpost. "Look," said the Philistines, "the Hebrews are crawling out of the holes they were hiding in." The men of the outpost shouted down to Jonathan and his armor bearer, "Come up to us and we'll teach you a lesson." So Jonathan says, "That's the sign. Climb up after me. The Lord has given them to the hand of Israel." just Jonathan and his armor bearer, the two of them, against a whole outpost. Jonathan climbed up using his hands and feet with his armor bearer behind him. The Philistines fell before Jonathan, and his armor bearer followed and killed behind him. In that first attack, Jonathan and his armor bearer killed some 20 men in the space of about half an acre. Then panic struck the whole army. Saul's lookout saw the army melting away in all directions. They said, "Who isn't with us? It's Jonathan." And all the men went into battle. They found the Philistines in total confusion. And all the Israelites routed the Philistines, who were now on the run. They joined in the battle in hot pursuit. So that day, the Lord saved Israel. So who is Jonathan? Well, he's a bit mad, really, isn't he? He's a fighter. He's like, bring it on. Bring on the battle. And we also see how he trusts in God. Just that it was the two of them. But he said, God is bigger. Doesn't matter that it's only two. And he took the battle to them. So that's who Jonathan is. Brave and fearless. Nothing can hinder the Lord from saving, he says, by many or by few. And so now we see Jonathan and David meet for the first time. And what happens is, this is the 40-day standoff. Do you remember that the Israelites go down every day, face Goliath and the Philistines? Goliath comes out and says, we'll do the old-fashioned way. We'll fight one-on-one for the success of this battle. And all the Israelites fled because they knew that none of them could defeat Goliath. And David walks into this situation. Now, in the tent, you've got King Saul and Jonathan with him every day deciding, what are we going to do? How are we going to get out of this mess? Trying to decide. And suddenly, a young lad walks into the tent. And this is the first time that Saul and Jonathan meet David. And I think what happened at that moment, as David walked in and started to talk to the king, as his bravery was shown, Jonathan found at last a kindred spirit. He said, this is a man like me. That David walked in, he was fearless, he was brave. The first thing that comes out of David's mouth is this. He gives reassurance to the king, right? He's about 17, and he gives reassurance. He says to Saul, let no one lose heart on account of this Philistine. I will go and fight him. So he walks into the tent. He gives reassurance. He talks about how he's killed lions and bears with his own hands. So you can see he's brave. Do you remember that he would, a lion or bear would steal one of the flock and he would chase after and take it from the jaws and kill the bear or the lion? And so also David went out and achieved huge success because he was confident in God. So he went out, everyone's watching, and you can imagine Saul and Jonathan up there outside their kingly tent, looking down and thinking, is this really going to work? And then as we know, David killed Goliath, struck him with a stone, he lands on the floor, he gets Goliath's own sword and cuts off his head. They all pursue in battle. Fantastic victory for Israel. Instead of Israel running away, now it's the Philistines running away. And David comes back into the tent carrying Goliath's head. You would keep just your bacon rolls down there now, see? Right? And this is what happens. I think that Jonathan, the guy who would just attack an outpost with his armor bearer, sees a man like himself. And he sees something in David that's just like him. A man who trusts in God, a man who isn't defeated by the odds, a man who is brave, and a man who is fierce. And when David comes back in after the battle, it says this. Saul called him in to, you know, debrief the battle. After David had finished talking with Saul, Jonathan became one in spirit with David, and he loved him as himself. From that day, Saul kept David with him, and did not let him return home to his family. And Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as himself. Jonathan took off the robe he was wearing and he gave it to David, along with his tunic and even his sword, his bow and his belt. And here their friendship begins. Now notice a couple of things here. David is hugely likable, right? He's been successful, he's been reassuring, he's brave, he's got the likability factor. There's a friendship chemistry straight away. And Jonathan acts on it straight away. He initiates. Now, we know later that when it's suggested that David marries the king's daughter, Michal, that he doesn't want to because he says, Do you think it's a small matter to become the king's son-in-law? I'm only a poor man and little known. And so David wouldn't presume to become the king's son-in-law, although he did after killing 200 Philistines. But we know that he was meek in heart. He knew his place. And so Jonathan had to initiate the friendship because he was the king's son. And so David couldn't presume to do that. But Jonathan takes the initiative and gives him his robe and his tunic and his belt and even his sword. And this is to show that a gift of friendship, that they are to become friends. And they make a covenant together and a promise of friendship. And in fact, they make three of these promises during their friendship together. So they have a great time, really, the two of them, going off fighting, on adventures. David gets more and more successful. But then eventually, tough times hit. And this is the testing time for any friendship when hard times come. Now, we know that Saul really promoted David. It says in chapter 18, verse 5, whatever mission Saul sent him on, David was so successful that Saul gave him a high rank in the army. This pleased all the troops and Saul's officers as well. And all Israel and Judah loved David because he led them in their campaigns. So as David becomes more and more successful, Saul becomes more and more jealous. And yet Jonathan doesn't become jealous. Their friendship deepens. Now remember this. As they become friends and David becomes successful, it must occur to Jonathan that he is not ever going to be king. He can see in David that David is going to become the future king. And yet he still loves him. If anyone had cause to be jealous, it would be Jonathan, because he knows he's going to be replaced. But instead, they build this deep and loyal friendship, even to their own cost. And then we find out that Saul tries to kill David on many occasions. And then on one occasion, Saul says, Saul told his son Jonathan and all the attendants to kill David. Now, Saul had tried it subtly, making sure David went into all these battles with the Philistines. And he said to himself, the Philistines will eventually kill him. But he never got killed. He was more and more successful. And so Saul now gives an instruction to his army and his attendants to go and kill David. But Jonathan, who had taken a great liking to David, warned him, my father Saul is looking for a chance to kill you. Be on your guard tomorrow morning. Go into hiding and stay there. I will go out and stand with my father in the field where you are. I will speak to him about you and will tell you what I find out. Now, can you see what a friend Jonathan is? Jonathan loves his father and he loves David and he's kind of caught in the middle. And he takes his father out into a field, risks his father's disapproval, risks what his father would say, and is brave enough as a young man who is trusted to counsel his own father. And this is what he says. Jonathan spoke well of David to Saul, his father, and said to him, let not the king do wrong to his servant David. He has not wronged you, and what he has done has benefited you greatly. He took his life in his hands when he killed the Philistine Goliath. The Lord won a great victory for all Israel that day, and you saw it and were glad. Why then would you do wrong to an innocent man like David by killing him for no reason? Saul listened to Jonathan, and then he took this oath. As surely as the Lord lives, David will not be put to death. So Jonathan called David, told him the whole conversation, and brought him to Saul, and David was with Saul as before. And can you see how Jonathan was the mediator? He reconciled the two of them. He didn't just sit in a corner discussing it with David and sit in a corner over here discussing it with Saul, but he was out in the open. He brought reconciliation between the two men. And also Saul listens to Jonathan's wise counsel. It was a brave step, and Jonathan actually listens. But of course it doesn't last. We learned last week about jealousy and how Saul was absolutely consumed with jealousy. And so he tries to kill David again. And there's a plot in the night. And David is now married to Michal, who is king, the king's daughter, and she was in love with him. And she warns him, my dad is coming for you. And she helped him escape down through the window in the middle of the night so he could escape. And he runs away to Samuel. And when the soldiers come, they find him gone. And of course, Saul is furious with his daughter. So how are they going to sort this out? Jonathan and David meet up. And David says, what is my crime? What have I done wrong? Why is your dad trying to kill me? And Jonathan says, he isn't trying to kill you. And David said, can't you see it plain as day? But Jonathan so believes in his dad at this point. He still believes in his father that it can't possibly be true. He also thinks he can win his dad round again. And so they have this conversation. And he says, I promise you, David, if I had the least hint that my dad was trying to kill you, I'd sort it out. But David says, look, Jonathan, your dad knows very well that I have found favor in your eyes. And he said to himself, Jonathan must not know this or he'll be grieved. And as surely as the Lord lives, there's only one step between me and death. And so they come up with a plan together. And there's a big feast coming up called the New Moon Festival. And they would all have this feast together. And David says, tell you what, do this for me. I won't come. I'll hide out in the field and my place will be empty. If your dad gets annoyed that I'm not there, we know he means to kill me. But if he's like cool about it, we know it's okay. And a couple of days later, I'll come back to the feast. So they agree to do this plan. David goes out and hides in the field. And they have this agreement that Jonathan will come out. There'll be a secret signal that Jonathan will bring a boy with him. And because Jonathan was an archer, he often went for archery practice. And he would say that he would take a boy with him. And if he said, the arrows are just here, it's safe. But if he said, the arrows are beyond you, it means run for your life. So anyway, he goes to the festival, and the first night, Saul sees the empty place, but just doesn't say anything. The next night, Saul sees the empty place, and he starts to question Jonathan why David isn't there. So Jonathan makes an excuse that David had gone home to his family, and suddenly, Saul's anger absolutely flares up against Jonathan. He goes completely off the deep end and says to him, don't I know that you have sided with the son of Jesse to your shame? Don't you know, as long as the son of Jesse lives on this earth, neither you nor your kingdom will be established. Now send him, bring him to me. He must die. Why should he be put to death? What has he done? Jonathan asked his father. But at that moment, Saul picked up his spear and hurled it at Jonathan to kill him. Then Jonathan knew that his father intended to kill David. Jonathan got up from the table in fierce anger. On that second day of the feast, he couldn't eat because he was so grieved at his father's shameful treatment of David. Can you see what's happened here? There's now a big rift between Jonathan and his father. Jonathan didn't actually believe his father could do that, but now Saul has thrown a spear at him too. And so Jonathan has like lost the relationship with his father. His father trying to kill him as well. And Jonathan takes a step back and he's fiercely angry. And now he is completely on David's side. Now, friendships are a fragile thing. Even in families, how we treat our mothers, our brothers, our sisters, our children. Thank you, Rob. Let's not take one another for granted. Let's not let our anger loose. Let's not fly off the handle. Let's not be indisciplined. Friendships and relationships are fragile. And we see Saul's feelings out of control and lashes out at his own trusted son and causes a rift. It also reveals the root of Saul's anger. Can you see here two things? One, he's jealous of David's relationship with Jonathan, because I think he felt displaced. And secondly, he's realized the succession will not go to Jonathan. And this is a cause of his anger as a father who's wanting to see his own son promoted. He's trying to kill David that the kingdom can go to Jonathan. So the very next morning, Jonathan goes out to the field where David is still hiding and shows him the secret sign. He does the arrows and he shouts out, the arrows are beyond you. Hurry, hurry, and don't stop. And he sends the boy away. And after the boy had gone, it says, David got up from the south side of the stone where he was hiding. He bowed before Jonathan three times with his face to the ground. Then they kissed each other and wept together. But David wept the most. Jonathan said, go in peace, because we've sworn friendship to each other in the name of the Lord, that the Lord is a witness between us. But be kind to my descendants when I'm gone. Now, can you see what a dangerous situation they're in? Jonathan is now in a really dangerous situation before the king, his own father. David is now being a hunted man. He's an outlaw. He has to escape. And they know that they may never see each other again. And David at this point goes on the run and ends up with a band of 400 men. And then there is one last recorded meeting between the two guys. They cry because they think they will never see each other again. But in the years that David is on the run, there is a time when he's absolutely at his lowest ebb. And what happens is Jonathan takes the risk and secretly goes to visit him. David was staying in the wilderness strongholds and in the hills of the desert. Day after day, Saul searched for him, but God did not give David into his hands. While David was at Horesh in the desert of Ziph, he learned that Saul had come to take his life. But Saul's son Jonathan went to David at Horesh and helped him to find strength in God. "Don't be afraid," he said. "My father Saul will not lay a hand on you, but you shall be king over Israel, and I will be second to you. Even my father knows this." And the two of them made a covenant before the Lord. And Jonathan went home, but David stayed. So can you see the strength of Jonathan secretly to go out and to risk his own life to go and bring strength? And he strengthened David in God, and he spent time with him, and he was there at his friend's lowest ebb. I remember a time when we were going through a really difficult and challenging time, and it was a day off, and we'd just come into the lounge with a cup of coffee. It was very early in the morning, and we were sat down saying, "You know, this is a really hard time. I just kind of really feel at the end of myself now." And suddenly there was a knock on the door, and it was a friend of ours who lives in Cardiff. And he woke up that morning and he was praying, and he felt God say to him, "Go and see Julian and Sarah, take a bottle of wine and flowers and get on the motorway right now." And he just turned up at our house out of the blue with wine and flowers. And the fact that he drove all the way from Cardiff, he stayed 20 minutes for a coffee, prayed with us and went back to Cardiff. That's friendship, isn't it? When your friend goes out of their way. I remember when my mother died and a number of my friends here drove all the way down to Chichester, a four-hour drive, just to be at the funeral, to be with me. And then they all drove back. And it's that friendship that says, "I'm standing with you, and whatever happens, I'm there. And here is Jonathan, he's here." And this is the last time they ever met. Because sadly, after this, Jonathan died on the battlefield. And when David heard about his death, he was so heartbroken, he tore his clothes, and he cried, and he mourned, and he wrote a song. And in those days, if you wrote a song, it was that all the people would know, and all the people would sing it. And he commanded that everybody should learn this song, so that Saul and Jonathan and their friendship would go down in history. And here's a little part of the song. Saul and Jonathan, this is David's words. "Saul and Jonathan, in life they were loved and admired, and in death they were not parted. They were swifter than eagles and stronger than lions. How the mighty have fallen in battle. Jonathan lies slain on your heights. I grieve for you, Jonathan, my brother. You were very dear to me. Your love for me was wonderful, more wonderful than that of women. How the mighty have fallen." And in this song, he talks about how dear Jonathan is to him, that they loved each other as brothers. It was more wonderful than the love of women. And I think we know David didn't have a great track record with women, but here in this man's world, standing together in battle, it talks about this astonishingly selfless quality of Jonathan's love, a deep brotherly love of loyalty and friendship under threat and to one's own disadvantage. Matthew Henry, a commentator, says this: "David had reason to say that Jonathan's love to him was wonderful. Surely never was the like. For a man to love one who knew was to take his own crown over his head and to be faithful to such a rival. Nothing is more delightful in this world than a true friend that is wise and good, that kindly receives and returns our affection and is faithful to us in all our true interests. Is surely a model of great friendship." And Jonathan, of course, David, of course, kept his promise to Jonathan, because Jonathan had a little boy. And this little boy was only five, and his name was Mephibosheth. And when this terrible battle happened, and Saul and Jonathan were killed, the army had pressed in, because if you could get the leaders, everyone else would scatter. And when the army pressed in and killed Saul and Jonathan on the battlefield, all the Israelites fled. They left their villages, they left the towns, they fled into the hills, because they knew what the Philistines were like. And so the only heir to the throne, if you didn't know it was going to be David, was little Mephibosheth. Because he was the next in line, he was Jonathan's son. And so the nurse gathered him up and started to run to take him away into hiding and dropped him. And he broke his legs and became lame. And so there's this little boy now with lame feet called Mephibosheth. And in a few weeks' time, we'll find out what happened to him. But David kept his promise. You remember when he promised to Jonathan that he would look after his family forever. And he made sure that would happen. So David and Jonathan had such a deep bond of friendship that stood against all the odds. They never gave up. They always persevered. Instead of being jealous like his father, Jonathan loved his friend to his own disadvantage. They fought many battles together, and they even fought within the family of when Saul descended into madness. Jonathan guarded David, helped him escape, and even went to comfort him when he was discouraged. And when we look at this wonderful story, we know that friendship is all about love deep down, because it is only love, true love, that is sacrificial. When we love somebody from the heart, that's not about our own needs or our own wants or wanting a friend to meet all our needs, but actually we become a giver in our relationship. And I think that when we go through those little points from the beginning, I've got a card for everyone here that they're going to give out for me in a moment. But to be part of our series, Keep Calm and Make Friends, these little points on the back. Is this what the guys did here? Be a friend, initiate. That happened. Chemistry. There was that chemistry, and yet they acted on it too. Be lovable. Givers and takers. Friendship is mutual. Unconditional love with no conditions. Friendship is fragile. And lastly, what the Bible says in 1 Corinthians, that real love is patient, it is kind and faithful, not jealous, angry, proud, or rude, keeps no record of wrongs, is unselfish, humble, rejoices in the truth, always trusts, always protects, always hopes. Love never gives up. I think for us as a body and a group of people here, we learned, didn't we, the other week about how we are spiritual family. And for us to build friendships in this way will enrich our own lives and the lives of other people. And so this morning, as we're just journeying in this series, we learned last week to put jealousy aside. We've looked at putting fear aside. We've looked at walking in our potential. But friendship is a true gift. It is a gift from God. And of course, we know Jesus was the friend who sticks closer than a brother. He is an amazing gift from God. But God has also gifted us with friendship in this life and in this world. And it is the one thing that will color our life more than anything else. They say that often on people's deathbed, they don't say, I wish I worked more, I wish I traveled more, it's I wish I loved more. Our friendships are eternal. And let's make sure we don't get busy with other things, but we make sure we invest in the quality of our friendships, because it's a gift from God.